Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. In what has been called an unprecedented snub to the leader of a member state, ASEAN on Tuesday decided to go on with its annual summit without Myanmar. This after the junta refused to send a representative to the three-day meetings. Now, in light of Myanmar's military's leadership, its resistance to implementing an agreed-upon roadmap, ASEAN foreign ministers had decided not to invite top General Min Aung Hlaing to this week's talks. Now, will this move change the junta's footing? Foot dragging on the ASEAN brokered 5-point consensus peace plan, or will Myanmar have to seek new allies instead? Let's begin our conversation tonight with Eric Paulson. He's the representative of Malaysia to the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights. Eric, Myanmar not being present at the ASEAN summit, what does that signal to you?
Hello, hi everyone. Thanks for having me. This is actually quite a significant move by ASEAN because for the first time, ASEAN has set a precondition for one of their members to send a representative to the meeting. This has never been done before, and I think this has caused quite a bit of obstruction on the part of Myanmar that for the inability to move quickly regarding the 5-point consensus which was decided upon by the ASEAN leaders back in April.
Eric, I mean, Myanmar did protest. I mean, it did say that this was not in the spirit of ASEAN. But it didn't take up the other options that ASEAN had put on the table, at least Brunei put it as host on the table, which included the non-political representative. Why do you think that they didn't choose those options?
I think there could be an issue of pride because, like I said earlier, this has never happened before. And normally ASEAN just accepts whichever particular leader that has been, put forward as a representative of a particular country. There was an emergency ASEAN foreign ministers meeting, which said that the issue about who represents Myanmar is still up for grabs, as there was a contested claim by the National Unity Government. And so I think this is a significant snub on the part of the Tatmadaw, and hence they have decided that rather than participating at the lower grade, then they rather look back and decide what to do next.
Right. Eric, you mentioned a bit earlier that, ASEAN leaders had taken this step to exclude the top general because of what they see as no progress on the 5-point consensus peace plan. Can you walk us through what is being seen as a lack of progress?
Well, the lack of progress is mainly there's just lack of cooperation from the part of the Tatmadaw. I think if you can recall back to the coup that happened in February, the ASEAN foreign ministers met in April, and then thereafter the ASEAN leaders met at a very highest level. So this is also significant because for the first time, ASEAN has met specially to discuss the human rights situation of grave concern of another ASEAN member state. And despite some criticisms that ASEAN is dragging its feet, I think ASEAN has done really well because in this particular meeting, which was done again face-to-face, General Min Aung Hlaing came to Jakarta and met all the ASEAN leaders face-to-face and agreed on a 5-point consensus. And thereafter, the ASEAN Special Envoy was appointed, which was the Foreign Minister of Brunei, the second Foreign Minister. And since he was appointed, he had tried to go to Myanmar and meet all the parties concerned. Unfortunately, there was some foot dragging and stonewalling on the part of the Tatmadaw. And because you know, one of the key stakeholders would be the leaders of the NLD. So there would be Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint, both of whom are under arrest and in detention. So this seemingly quite reasonable request to meet both of these persons were rebuffed by the Tatmadaw.
Eric, do you think ASEAN should recognize the national unity government, the government, as it were, of the opposition forces, you know, NLD included?
I certainly think whatever that was decided in the ASEAN summit, it was a huge step, because for the first time in the ASEAN chair statement, they recognized the NUG's claim to government. Certainly, several individual ASEAN member states, they have met up with the NUG privately. But as a whole, I think ASEAN should certainly take steps to meet up with the NUG. Certainly so.
Okay. Well, you also might, so because you talked about the perhaps failure of Donda to fulfill the 5-point consensus, is dialogue still the way to go in engaging what the democratic crisis in Myanmar?
Unfortunately, I think dialogue is the way to go. I know there have been issues regarding, because there's still violence that is ongoing. There's a civil war that's happening in other parts of Myanmar. And all the peaceful protests that has been occurring since the coup in February, they have been met with bullets. So understandably, some Myanmar people have resorted to taking up arms. But I think dialogue is still the way to go, because what other options are there? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, this particular crisis is for the Myanmar people to resolve among themselves. And of course, ASEAN and the international community can play a role in trying to, get the best possible outcome for the Myanmar people. And I think dialogue is certainly the way.
Zerik, we hear that in a meeting later this year, Cambodia has also taken a decision. It's been reported not to invite Minh Aung Hlaing, the general who heads the junta. Do you think that there's going to be an end point of this, refusal to invite Myanmar? And is there a danger that Myanmar might choose to turn its back on ASEAN? Is that something that ASEAN member states fear?
I certainly think that ASEAN values Myanmar's membership, and likewise, Myanmar values ASEAN membership. As you know, ASEAN is a bloc of 10 countries, and traditionally, ASEAN, they have supported all of their member states whenever they get into, international criticism. But of course, at what cost? Certainly for the Tatmadaw, to be part of ASEAN is of huge significance, because it provides international legitimacy and also international cover. As for ASEAN, what sort of benefit would they get with a Myanmar that is, contested, that is in civil war, that is on the verge of failed state, that affects also their credibility and international standing? So I think all these competing factors would have to come into play. And I think, and I hope the Tatmadaw would come to its senses and adhere to the 5-point consensus that Minh Aung Hlaing personally agreed to in Jakarta. So I hope the Cambodian chair would just carry on the stance that was taken this year.
Eric, you are the Malaysian representative to the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights, AICHA, right? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the role of AICHA in perhaps dealing with the Myanmar crisis.
AICHA was established, as part of the reform process in ASEAN. It was part of the ASEAN Charter. It was established in 2012, and AICHA is now more than 10 years old. in the last 10, 11 years, AITRE has done tremendously well when it came to the promotion of human rights in ASEAN. However, when it comes to protection work, I think we are still lacking behind, and that is something that we are trying to address. Regarding the issue on Myanmar, again, this is an issue which is quite difficult because AITRE, like all ASEAN structures, we are also bound by the principles of non-interference and decision by consensus. But having said that, in April of this year, for the first time, AITRE managed to discuss the human rights development of another member state, which was Myanmar. And during that particular meeting in April, several countries, including Malaysia, we intervened on the issue of Myanmar and raised issues of human rights abuses and so forth.
I mean, Eric, do you think the idea or the principle of non-interference was problematic from the very beginning? I mean, it might be a practical principle, but philosophically, at least when you talk about human rights, the idea that, one can't look into the practices and violations of member states does seem to go against the very spirit of human rights. How do you square this circle?
Well, non-interference is just one of the many principles within ASEAN. Yes, it is a core principle, but nonetheless, when it comes to, serious issues of common concern that affects the whole region, the issue of the Rohingya, for example, I would certainly support what the foreign ministers of Malaysia recently said in a forum that it would be better to call it non-indifference. So and I think many countries in ASEAN, and I think ASEAN as a whole, have decided in the case of Myanmar, we cannot just sit back and say non-interference.
Eric, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Eric Paulson there, the Malaysian representative to the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, but we will be back with more on this topic, so stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying. Shraddh and I on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about Myanmar's exclusion from the ASEAN Summit. Debbie Stoddard joins us now. She's the founder of the Democracy Advocacy Group Alternative ASEAN Network on Burma. Debbie, observers are touting this move to exclude General Min Aung Hlaing from the ASEAN Summit as, a bold move, as a historic move, as one that is unprecedented, is an unprecedented snub on the part of ASEAN. Do you share a similar sentiment?
Well, we saw something similar happening in 2005. There was so much international and also intra-regional resistance to Myanmar chairing ASEAN in 2006 that eventually the regime under Senior General Tan Shui at that time had to save face and withdraw from the chair. And that was unprecedented because until that point, there was a very strict rotation of the chair. And so people were saying when there was originally resistance to Myanmar chairing ASEAN back in 2006 and ASEAN parliamentarians rallied around that, people said this is impossible, but the impossible happened. They had to withdraw from the chair. This time, the military junta, Min Aung Hlaing, not just slapped ASEAN on one side of the face, but also on the other side. Firstly, within weeks of the 5-point consensus being adopted, violence in the country rose by 27% instead of ceasing. And on top of that, instead of starting dialogue with the elected members of parliament and ethnic leaders, the junta started to arrest and lay treason charges on hundreds of people. And in Myanmar, treason is a capital offense. So instead of dialoguing with these people, they put death sentences on these people. So I think in this situation, ASEAN had no choice but to disinvite Senior General Min Aung Hlaing.
So there's a bit of nuance in this, right? It's not like they didn't invite Myanmar. They, in fact, provided options for the junta in the form of a non-political representative. And isn't it also true that ASEAN has agreed that the status of who leads the government, as it were, is still a contested one? Aren't these really important concessions? Won't these be considered historic?
Well, you know, ASEAN tried to have this slightly face-saving situation. They saved their face by disinviting Min Aung Hlaing, but they thought they were saving the face of the junta by allowing them to present a non-political representative, a career diplomat. But in this case, you know, it's a delicate game of poker or brinkmanship where the junta Marajo and threw a tantrum and said, if we can't have our senior general there, then nobody should come, which actually was quite consistent with what the democracy movement said, that it was not acceptable to have any kind of representation from the junta.
Right. But might this impact the junta negatively by, you know, by excluding General Min Aung Hlaing from the ASEAN summit? Might he, in a way, lose face in the international community, might lose legitimacy in a way?
I think there's one way, there's one important message that needs to be heard by the Myanmar military, that Senior General Min Aung Hlaing's personal ambition and greed, which started this coup and which continued to inflict violence all around the country, is a liability to the military. He's put them on a path of no return. And he's also a liability to ASEAN, to regional security, and even to China and India and all the other dialogue partners having to grapple with the consequences of what we've seen as 5,000 military attacks in the past 8 months. We're looking at 20 armed attacks a day happening around the country.
Debbie, maybe we could talk about some of the other moves that have happened. The UN has appointed Nolene Heizer as its special envoy to Myanmar. She, of course, is a Singaporean, but also has held many high-ranking positions in the UN. Is this significant? Will she be able to do what the former ASEAN envoy, who was supposed to have, talks with or access to the various stakeholders in the country, failed to do?
I think the stakes are raised for ASEAN. They need to go beyond disinviting Senior General Min Aung Hlaing to throwing their weight behind Her Excellency Nolene Heizer to make this role work. And that means, too, that ASEAN members need to partner up with the dialogue partners, the ones who are at the summit today, and to actually take this up to the Security Council. If ASEAN is able to form some type of partnership with the UN Security Council, the military will have no choice but to listen, because this is the body that they fear the most.
I see. So what do you see perhaps coming out from this ASEAN summit? Might there be a conclusive plan forward or a plan of action going forward? Are you hopeful that by the time the summit concludes, we might see some concrete action taken?
I think there's going to be a feeling among some stakeholders in ASEAN that they've gone far enough by disinviting Min Aung Hlaing and who might be intimidated that the junta threw a tantrum and didn't send anybody at all. But I think if we really want to resolve the situation instead of having to grapple with the human and economic instability, the human security, the instability in terms of human security and economic disruptions, then we actually need to go further. We need to actually have a very clear plan of action that has to be the Security Council and other ASEAN dialogue partners coming into play, and that the aim would be to pressure the military to recognize that Min Aung Hlaing has got to go and in order to start the to return to the path of democracy, to start some type of peaceful negotiation and political settlement to basically what has now deteriorated into a nationwide civil war.
Debbie, how important are, you know, the US, the EU, and you know, China and India in this game? How will they be more important in the end than ASEAN is in determining the course of what is going to happen in that country?
Well, you know, there's been this long political game, a very recurring political game where everyone says, what about China? And then China says, we'll take the lead from ASEAN, the region, you know, it's up to ASEAN. And so everybody's saying it's up to India and China, and the others are, and India and China saying it's up to ASEAN. I think we can't afford to play this pass the buck game. Everyone has to take some leadership. India cannot afford what's happening now, because the Indian border, the area in Chin State and Sagaing bordering India is one of the areas targeted for massive offensive. There's been massive troop buildup there. We've also seen a rise in troop buildup up in the north near the China border and near the Thai border. So if the military were to move all their forces into those areas and unleash basically a dry season offensive, then all of these countries are going to have to bear the brunt of it. And we can't afford it. We're having a COVID pandemic. We're trying to deal with a whole bunch of domestic challenges. So I think everybody's interest. It's everybody's interest to actually resolve this problem.
Yeah, I get that, but you know, there's also real politics, and then you know, we have Russia cozying up to them, or the military cozying up to Russia. We have you know, various chambers of commerce from all these countries we just talked about, who are quite happy to, you know, meet in secret with the Minister of Investment and continue their business dealings. Perhaps, you know, in a situation like that, somebody's going to make a profit. Well, you know, isn't that the other side of the
definitely.
Coin?
There's definitely opportunists trying to make the profit, but at the same time, there are a lot of companies, even companies not known for their corporate social responsibility, withdrawing and divesting because they recognize the reality on the ground that it's not the situation in Myanmar is not good for business. And I think this is where we've already come to that tipping point. I mean, 80% of the banks have shut down in the country. The Chat has lost more than half its value within a short period of 8 months in an economy that was outperforming the rest of ASEAN last year. There was 3% growth in the GDP last year in the Myanmar economy. And this year, it's projected to shrink by 18.4%. So, you know, even if businesses were chasing the big bucks, they know that they're not going to make much profit any longer. This is not an economically sustainable situation.
Okay, I just want to say there was a report, Debbie, very quickly of Malaysian companies continuing to engage with the junta. Is it important that ASEAN companies take a position in this crisis, or should they just be there to make a profit?
Anyone who's staying in Myanmar at this point is a little bit stupid, to be honest. I mean, The junta is not able to collect taxes. It's actually running out of money. International financial institutions like the World Bank and the Asian Development Bank have frozen more than $11 billion in loans and grants. And this is an economy where the national GDP last year was $80 billion. So they've actually already lost nearly, you know, they've lost at least 15% of the GDP. This is why the economy is shrinking rapidly. There's not much trust in this military junta's ability to run the economy.
Debbie, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight, providing your insights. Debbie started there from the Alternative ASEAN Network on Burma. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.